Hey, Project Big Screen listeners, you can find us every Monday on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or YouTube. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music.
Academy Award winner J.K. Simmons stars in the new MGM Plus original series, The Westies.
There it is, Javits Center.
Biggest construction project in the history of New York falls into the lap of the Irish.
This Irish crime gang built New York City on blood, sweat, and loyalty. Their legend is true.
The Italians outnumber us about 100 to 1.
Their story is criminal.
This Irish guy's threatening war.
He's gotta go.
Keep out of Hell's Kitchen.
The Westies. Watch now. Only on MGM Plus.
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn.
What killed the dinosaurs? The Ice Age!
You want a cup of joe with you?
I'm gonna make you famous, Lizzie.
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk.
Dunkachino?
Don't mind if I do.
I'm the Joker, baby.
This episode presented by Rocket Money. Good time of the year to save money. You know how much your subscriptions might be costing you? Maybe you have Netflix. Maybe you got HBO Max. You got Disney Plus. You got all those. Adds up. Most Americans think they spend around $80 a month on subscriptions when they're really spending closer to $200. The Rocket Money app shows all your subscriptions in one place, cancels you don't want, and it does it for you. That's the big thing. Rocket Money can find shit you need when you're paying for. To cancel a subscription, all you got to do is press cancel. That's it. Rocket Money takes care of the rest. Cancel unnecessary subscriptions with Rocket Money today. Save money. Maybe you're paying for two. I was paying for two Hulu subscriptions at one time. Maybe you're not realizing you're paying for something. Rocket Money will help you cancel things, and it does it for you. Takes all the hard stuff out of the way for that. Rocket Money, great way to save money, great way to clean things up in your finances. So right now, go to rocketmoney.com/lights. Can save you hundreds per year. That's rocketmoney.com/lights.
Welcome to Lights, Camera, Barstool, episode 69 of season 2. Jeff Lowe, Ken Jack, Gooch, Chris Castellani. What's going on? First show of 2023?
Second.
First one of all of us.
Correct. Yes. We have two very different movies we're talking about today. Babylon from Damien Chazelle and Megan. I honestly, the fact we're talking about Megan is feels like already like one of the more bigger upsets of the year already. And then I'll get into even further why it's an even crazier upset when we talk about it, because I think everybody liked it. So we'll talk about that.
Yeah. That's super exciting, too. And I think that me, Gooch, and Chris are all very excited that you took a break from working at BlackRock and came up from the financial district to come in and record the pod with us. Mr. Vestined on top of flannel,
I'm wearing boots.
Oh my God! You party exclusively in Murray Hill. This guy doesn't go anywhere.
We got a lot
of that area.
To talk about, you want to go to Cava? I got to know. I made one of the all time bad moves. I got new sneakers for Christmas and I threw them away before I threw away my old ones before testing out the new ones. Not good. Just not. Ooh. So now the boots, the only comfortable Blister shoes City. I have, which are not practical if you're someone like me who only really wears shorts even when it's 30 degrees outside. So now it's a nightmare scenario. Adidas ruined their boots. They made new boots and they stink.
Oh, they're terrible.
It seems like a New Yorker look though, shorts and dress shoes. That seems like something we would bring into prominence. You could be like a trailblazer.
Yeah, something like that. May not be the right company to do that with. a good way to get flamed is to become a meme.
Roasted.
Yeah, movies. We're also going to talk 2023 movies too. Top five most anticipated movies of next year. But first, Ocean's 11. My favorite movie of all time. Reboot, starring actually somebody in Babylon, Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling. Warner Brothers, they're going to reboot Ocean's 11. Though they've said plot details are being kept in the wrap, but the prequel story is expected to take place in 1960s Europe, far away from Las Vegas. Which, I off the top, what a mistake already. Like, is that not already a mistake? Yeah. The most liked, I will say, Ocean's 12 I've warmed up to over the years. Like, I think there's some creative, fun stuff in 12. But like, why are we going away from Vegas?
Was it 12 that had the French guy doing the dance through the lasers? That shit rocked. That shit rocked. Undeniable.
This just doesn't sound like it's an Ocean's movie. It sounds like they just slapped the they're like heist movie centered around casinos and gambling. Let's call it Ocean's. Like, this, nothing about it really sounds like an Ocean's movie, unless they name Ryan Gosling's character like another Danny Ocean. I don't know what they're doing.
I will say, the idea of it being in Europe is scary at first, but like, we were talking about Bond the other day, and like, the idea of like, I think that was Montenegro where Casino Royale took place or whatever, or like, you do like Monaco or whatever, like, you do those fancy European casinos and you get the vibe of like Man from U.N.C.L.E., where it's just a bunch of super sexy people doing heist stuff. Like, I'm into it. I'm very much into that vibe, even though it's just kind of slapping, like you're saying, slapping the Ocean's brand onto something that isn't really the Ocean's feel.
And this has no connection to Ocean's 8, like, or
no, because sure, they said it's set in the 60s, so it probably won't. Also, like,
you gotta have Frank Sinatra,
not to be morbid, but like, they can't really do an original one anymore. People are just dying from the 2000 one. Like, Bernie Mac's been dead for a while. Mm-hmm. Like, Carl Reiner's dead. I mean, Elliot Gould, is he's not dead, but.
Elliot Gould's still
kicking. He was in Ocean's 8, and I mean, he was looking pretty old. Which, fair, he was old in Ocean's 11, so it's not like, I'm not like.
Get in the car.
This, or whatever. I just don't think this is a, unfortunately, and I hate to say this, I just don't think this is a thing that can ever work again. The only way Ocean's 11 works again is if they somehow come up with a newer heist in 15, 20 years. And just redo the Vegas one. But like, even then, like, that's just a tall task. You can't recapture that movie. And kind of funny enough, Knives Out, I guess, was close. But even in terms of star power, like, you're just not going to do it again. I just don't think you can get it. And if you do get the people, it's probably just not going to be very good.
I'll say too, on top of that, like, even with Ocean's 11, when it came out, like, it wasn't looked at like, hey, here's George Clooney and Brad Pitt, two of the world's finest actors. It was just like, hey, here's two hot dudes and like Julia Roberts or whatever, and like, they're all just doing this heist movie. Like, when you have like Ryan Gosling and Margot Robbie, who like, I think, were both extremely well respected actors in addition to being super attractive, like, I think there's a different level of expectations that go with that versus like the goofiness value of like the Ocean's cast.
I wouldn't hate Gosling and Margot becoming the new Clooney Andrews. That'd be a nice little tandem. Just keep casting them in movies together.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know. Like, I want to think that it could be, honestly, making it in the 60s might make it a little better too, because you run out of like, you can't set it now, because the better technology gets, the tougher those movies are to land. Like, 13 was cool, but like, they even had to deal with that in 13, where it's like, you got to bring in this fucking.
Jimmy just lost Jeff, as you said.
If they did update it, and like, instead of like stealing like a painting from like a like museum, they just like stole like somebody's ape, their NFT ape.
Somebody's NFT, yeah.
All my apes are gone.
That would be the ultimate, like,
Danny Ocean holds up his phone, just like scrolling through his photos, and he just has.
It would just be that would be the ultimate like clowned on decision, I think, in movie history. Like, that would get roasted almost immediately. Oh, and by the way, Jeff's working from the Barstool office at this moment. The Barstool office, despite us being an internet company, has the worst Wi-Fi and internet service that's ever been created. And it was a funny joke for a while. It's not really funny anymore. It just kind of sucks really bad. So if you're listening to this and you're like, damn, it kind of sucks that the flow got interrupted by Jeff getting cut off, just tweet at All Business Pete and just make sure that he knows that you're pissed off that the internet at the office doesn't work, because us saying it doesn't really do much, apparently, anyway. But yeah,
I need M3 GAN to fucking hack Pete's shit.
M3
fix our Wi-Fi.
Exactly. Ooh, yeah. Anyway, that was Oceans. What was the next news item?
Gladiator, Paul Mescal.
Oh, Gladiator 2 casting Paul Mescal. Do we have, I think the plot, the details of it is, it's Gladiator fighting through time, right? Or did they switch it?
That was it early on. I can't imagine they're going to do that
anymore. I don't think that's the case anymore.
That would have been awesome.
That would have been insane.
it would have been the opening to X-Men Wolverine Origins, except just like
yes, stretched which is out the best part of that movie.
Literally, that's one of the best. It's awesome. But
yeah,
I think just Maximus, Russell Crowe's too old to do it, but like Maximus just fighting like he's in the Civil War.
He's like, dude, fucking Sabretooth running up the beaches at Normandy like a horse girl on all fours, like jumping into a pillbox. That shit was so funny. Like it just that was the best part of that movie. But Paul Mescal rocked. Really good actor in I almost called it Triangle of Sadness. No, Decision
Wolverine,
to Leave.
Wolverine accidentally kills Archduke Franz Ferdinand.
That's not, well, then it's turning into the King's Man, basically. The King's Man was so funny with that, where they did like the LCB 90s episode bit of like, yeah, here's this guy coming up at the end of the movie. What's your name, buddy? Adolf Hitler. And then it cut to black. Like that shit was, that was unbelievable. But yeah, Gladiator 2. I think the kid who played Lucius went on to keep acting, if I remember right.
Yes,
like he was another stuff. Actor. Yeah. Was he in Bohemian Rhapsody? No, that was the kid from Jurassic Park, mm-hmm. right? He played like the drummer or something in Bohemian Rhapsody. But yeah, no, that's a good actor. I don't know how a Gladiator 2 rocks or works at this point because like you need like an insane production value, which is what Gladiator had. Like yeah. that looked amazing. Like Gladiator, like you make it feel like you're there. And I don't know if they have the juice to do that without just being like telling Ridley Scott, hey, go to a green screen or whatever and go and shoot all the series so we could save some cash. I do think if you look at his last movie with The Last Duel, which however you feel about it, I think the production value is there.
Looked great.
You
know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. Like it made you feel like it was the Middle Ages and it didn't look like there was a shit ton of green screen.
Yeah, I thought that movie was boring too.
Yeah, you guys aren't allies like me, supporting Jodie Comer, so I understand why you didn't like it.
I'll even say that I love Jodie Comer. She could do whatever she wants. Cast her as the Joker. I don't care.
Dude, Ben Affleck in The Last Duel rocked, and I won't let anyone tell me otherwise. Yeah. He was having so much fun with that. That was great. The bleach blonde everything, and him just being like a hedonistic freak. Like, I love that shit. But yeah, that's Gladiator 2. What was
Ridley
the next
Scott's
one?
Due for one, right? Like he's
overdue.
Like he's due for like
I just think he's lost his mind though. Like that's my issue with him is I think he's like old and senile and crazy. Like I don't know if he's really capable of making good movies anymore.
Whereas like Scorsese's and like James Cameron's comments about like the movie industry, they're like Cameron's are funny because he's just trolling, and Scorsese is like insightful. Like he actually has like good points to be made. Ridley Scott's kind of just an asshole whenever he talks about like the industry at large. Like. It's like,
yeah,
dude,
he's lost his mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, to Scott's credit, I do think he is like, I don't think I just think that. Like, he is like a visionary director in a lot of ways. One of the cool things about him, and also to note, he made Raised by Wolves, which was, I think, a pretty damn good show for whatever that's worth, at least in the first season, especially. Like, that was good sci fi. And I think he is a guy where maybe he's like out of touch with like the newer age of like making movies or whatever, but like he is a guy who knows how to make good blockbusters. And like he's also, I think, the number one director's cut director. Like almost every movie of his, it has a director's cut that's better than the original cut. You know what I mean? Like with Kingdom of Heaven, Blade Runner, whatever, like every single movie, he gets his cut fucked with and then his cut ends up being like 10 times better. And I think he's a guy who knows how to make epics, number one, really good at that and really good at.
He's who Zack Snyder fans think Zack Snyder is.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly that. But I think he's a he's obviously an awesome director, and I just like him getting more chances. What's really cool about him, too, is he, like, he's an artist before he was a director. So, like, he storyboards every single shot in, like, extreme detail. And, like, he has, like, all these storyboards of everything he makes. It's, like, awesome to look at when you ever get a chance to look at those. What was after Gladiator?
Those are our two news items, and then we're just going to hop into these because we're doing two reviews and then a ranking draft.
All right, let's hop into Megan.
We can do M3 GAN, or we can do Babylon first.
I say we do Megan first because I feel like that'll be quicker, and then we can get into that. So Megan, you've all heard about it. Megan, it has like maybe one of the more like when you. Over the last couple of years, like one of the better viral marketing campaigns out of, as Gooch does the little twist, of like the last few years, like alongside with like Smile, they did like the same sort of thing. Great viral marketing, horror movie about a doll killing people, directed by Gerard Johnstone, starring the biggest name in this is Allison Williams. And it is about a little doll made by an aunt taking care of an orphan child that's meant to pair and make the kid feel better. Simple, It's a nice little satirical sci-fi horror blend of movies, a couple different genre blends in this. I think that there's a couple things to say. I think this movie, for at least for me, like, I can break it down into like pros and cons. And I'll say here, it's not like it's been out forever, but we could talk, like, we want to just go straight into spoilers with this, because I don't feel like it's worth like protecting.
I feel like anyone who wanted to see this saw it this weekend.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, and it did. I think it was number one in the box office this last weekend too, which is crazy.
Still,
Behind Avatar.
I was still there.
Yeah. Worldwide, then yeah. But yeah, so we'll go straight into spoilers. I will say, I think all of us are in the general. Before we get into the spoilers, we're all in the general idea of just saying, like, I'd say this is a recommend. Gooch, you would say this is a recommend.
Yeah.
What about you, Chris?
Yeah, recommend. Yeah,
this is a recommend. So that's what we'll stop there, and then we'll get into spoilers. So I think the pros of this movie for me is that Megan has a very strong sense of identity, which is super important for a movie like this, because a movie like this could be like very easily misunderstood by audiences if they didn't get the vibe right and like express it to the audience correctly. I think it was a really good use of the creepiness that's inherent in all dolls. The all dolls are creepy. If you collect dolls, you're a weirdo. I'm sorry. It's the perfect length, and which is short, which is great for all horror movies. But I think the cons here is that I don't think Megan does everything okay. I don't think it does anything great. Like the satire, horror, suspense, humor, like all that stuff, none of it is great. It's all okay. Which is fine, but like it definitely prevented it for me from getting into like top tier territory. I don't think there's a standout acting performance, which isn't the end of the world for horror. And I don't feel like it lived up to the marketing hype, which is whatever. But like, also, like, you look at the Rotten Tomatoes score for this in the upper 90s when it starts, it's nowhere near that for me. It ended up for me being a 75 out of 100. Chris, what did you think of Megan?
I also have 75 out of 100 here. I think that's a fair rating. You made a really good point there about how there's nothing in this that, like, okay, let's be honest. I think we all expected this to be a fuck you, it's January movie. Like, prime example of it. Yeah, like, this movie had the lowest, might have the lowest percentage chance of being good of, like, any movie I'm going to see this year. And I'm with you. There's never a moment where I fell in love with it, but it's remarkably watchable, and there's never a moment in which, unlike a lot of these horror movies, it becomes obnoxious. It never becomes overly stupid. It's never too long. It's never over-reliant on the jump scares. I think with a movie like this, sometimes it's more important what you don't do as opposed to what you do. And I think that they avoided a lot of the really annoying tropes that bog these movies down. It's like, it's surface level good. It never goes to great. I think it's a fun movie to see with a crowd. I would be surprised if we don't end up getting a sequel to this, because it seems like it's kind of, you know, being a surprise hit. Even the final shot kind of alludes to that. It's not a movie I would actively go out and see again, but it's watchable. It's likable. And for a January movie, first week of January, I mean, my God, you can do so much worse. Last year at this point, we were talking about the 355. So it's like, so you could definitely do worse. I think that it's a prime example of how having a solid directorial vision can really help. Cause I don't think that this is, like you said, the most well-acted movie. I don't think it's necessarily the most well-written, but the execution is way better than it had any right to be. So yeah, 75 out of 100 for me. I think most people that see this will get enjoyment out of it.
Yeah. I'm at a 70 out of 100. I think the score is liable to come down. I think it plays very well to an audience. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a movie, if you're going to watch it, I would highly recommend catching it in theaters, because it's fun to see with a group of people. Like, just, there are people literally just like hooting and hollering. Like, the literal definition of hooting and hollering was happening in my theater. I think there are a few parts where, like, when she starts singing Titanium, my theater lost.
Yeah.
Like, that's about as hard as I've seen a theater laugh in a long time. Some of the parts were very intentional, like set up almost as memes, right? Like, some of the shots were like, this is going to be a meme. Like, they put this in there to be a meme. Like, her sitting in the back of a car, like, staring out the window, her coming up over the fence with her hair all fucked up. Like, I was laughing so hard at that. I also think this was very clearly at some point a rated R movie.
Yes, that's one complaint I forgot to bring up. Yep, good point.
I'll be interested to see what it looks like once it hits streaming, if they release maybe a more unrated cut of the movie. Because there's parts where it's like they definitely said a swear word there because that audio did not match whatever the fuck their mouth was saying.
I noticed that too. Wow, yeah.
Which not great, but like, yeah, you notice stuff like that. I think where you said it was a perfect runtime, Kinjack, I think you could have shaved about 15 minutes off, especially at the beginning. I don't know if we needed to see their points. The parents' death was pretty stupid. Like that whole car ride, like I was just like, oh, we don't really need this. Like we could have just opened with her taking in her niece. You know, we could have started there. Opening with that, by the way, the ad for that toy that just farts.
Yeah.
So perfectly, like I thought that was really funny because, like, if you watch like any kind of toy commercial, that's more or less what they are. Like, it's like farts are funny to kids. Farts will always be funny to kids. They are funny, mm-hmm. and that's what's going
to
sell a toy.
Funny to everybody.
They're funny to adults. Yeah, I know. Have you watched the Yak lately?
Yeah, seriously.
Let's just turn our podcast into that. That's what does numbers. We're going to pivot to a
fart. Yeah, we should do that for real. I can't do it though because of the whole hemorrhoid thing.
Oh, that's true.
I could try.
Can Jack gives
it? It would sound like the fucking. You ever pin a playing card to the back of your bike?
Yes,
that's what it would sound like.
See, I'm at a 70 out of 100. Like you guys said, there's nothing really great about this movie, especially like, the acting is bad. Yeah, like Allison Williams is not a good actor. Like she just isn't.
Yeah.
But the toy looked cool. The toy was funny. The horror was good. Like the jump scares were well done and like not overused. It was fun. It's like everything you wanted Child's Play, the rebooted Child's Play to be. This is what this ended up being. And there's some cool messaging in there too. Like,
yeah,
I don't really love the idea of like, because technology bad is kind of overused at this point. I think Black Mirror kind of beat it into the ground and we've seen it done a million ways because of that. But I think they did it pretty well.
Yeah. So were you guys, I think, wanted it to be more rated R? I'm almost happy it wasn't because I feel like, again, going back to like the sense of identity, I think if you go rated R, it's just Chucky and a worse version, I guess, of Chucky. Yeah. So I think that part of its identity was to not try or try hard not to be basically what Chucky is. And I think that that was probably a pretty stringent objective for it, I would imagine, especially for them and execs and everything. Like, let's just not rip that off. And it worked because it did make it, you at no point when you're watching this are you like, oh, Chucky did that better, or this did this better, or this did that better. It's just, or Annabelle, whatever. Like, this was, I think it managed to forge its own way and feel unique in what is a relatively dominated space of doll horror. And I think it made its a little version of it with I think a well done sort of spin. And it was the same writer, I believe, that did Malignant, which is one that I think most of us liked pretty much from last year. And you could see a lot of the same vibes in certain ways. It just like, again, it comes down to me like where this movie doesn't even approach the 90s or anything like that is like there's nothing like it's that was unbelievable. Like, and that's like the first 40, it was only with the first 40 critics that it was at 98%, but like, and I think it's now just down to like 91 or 90 or something, but even that is egregious. No. It's nowhere close to that. Even for what it's trying to accomplish, it's nowhere close to that. Because again, I think for me is it's the jack of all trades, master of none. And like, that makes for a solid movie. It doesn't make for a great movie. Like it needed to do something, whether it was, you know, the humor, the kills or whatever. It needed to do something that was excellent, and nothing about the movie is excellent. And other than maybe like the doll design, like the doll was creepy as fuck. Like, and that's something that I think they did really well for whatever that's worth.
The doll was so funny. Like, that doll was just funny. The faces she made and the dialogue she had was funny. I'm excited. By the way, Chris, you said you didn't know if there was a sequel coming. They've already committed to one and they're writing one.
Not surprising at all.
The title has to be Meg 4. Meg 4. Right?
Yeah, they kind of screwed themselves with that, huh?
I'm excited. James Wan produced this, by the way.
Yeah.
Right?
He also produced Annabelle. And it sounds like
he's very heavily involved.
Mm-hmm. He is kind of like a godfather of horror at this point. And I think, again, I wouldn't hate for more sequels of this because like they're solid. It's just like maybe if they were to make a second one, find a way to like truly step this up. And I just love the idea of like a doll maker creating a Terminator. Like that's just, it's funny. I don't know. Just
that
funny.
Very clear homage to Terminator was awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like,
yes.
Then, like, they, when she took the chainsaw to Megan's face and like her, yeah, like half of her face was open, like that was awesome. I liked that a lot. Yeah. Like, it's well done. When you can do an homage like that and it's well done, like for a little movie buff, like a little moviegoer, you're like, oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Give me that.
And the goofiness of the little kid like putting on the real steel gloves and fighting fighting Megan with the big ass robot. Like, that shit rocked. Bruce. That actress we've seen and stuff too, I think. What, Bruce?
That's what the robot's name was.
That was Bruce. The name of the robot.
That was the name of his robot in Real Steel?
No, in Megan.
Megan. Oh, the proxy robot. Its name was...
Catch that. I was like, how the fuck did you guys remember the Real Steel robot's name? And why was it Bruce at all? It was also like Blue Thunder or something. Fuck. What was the robot's name in Real Steel? That was a good movie that deserves a sequel, by the way. That was like a fun-ass sci-fi movie.
I thought they announced one, didn't they?
Like years ago, and I feel like it never came to fruition. Charlie Kenton. That's just a great, dumb-ass sci-fi name for Hugh Jackman. What the fuck was his robot's name?
Here, I got some titles for Megan.
Noisy Boy.
All right. The next Megan is going to be called Meg4N. And then we got Megan's. It's going to be multiple Megans in the third one, but it's going to be called M3 GAN 5. So the 5 is like the X. The sixth one is going to be called Being Megan, but this time the A is a 4 and the B in Being is a 6.
Okay.
Got it? We got Megan, a Knives Out Mystery, Bride of Megan, Seed of Megan, and then Guillermo del Toro's Megan.
give what was his name? Paul Wes Anderson a shot at a Megan movie. His version. Milo Jovovich as Megan. Yeah.
Paul Wes Anderson deserves nothing.
Paul worthless shit Anderson.
Worthless. Yeah, no, but give him a Megan and then he'll cast Milo Jovovich as Megan and it would be a good movie, I'm sure.
Now we're talking.
Yeah, so yeah, that would be something.
That's a different kind of movie.
Correct me if I'm wrong. They did make a bunch of Megans, right? Like in just that the Megan that we saw was already the only one online. Like
no, I think that's the only one they made because it was like really expensive, and they were like trying to keep the cost under the radar to hide from that boss. By the way, that stuff was also a big negative for me.
Like everything to do with the dickhead CEO tech boss, yeah,
played by who is that? Ronnie Chen.
Ronnie Chen.
Yeah, it was very funny.
Yeah, like that was just like. I needed a lot less of that.
Yeah, significantly less of that.
Take me back to the doll.
Yes. It should have been nothing but doll interaction. By the way, another trope that they did, which I appreciate that they did, is that they did the creature kill that starts with the dog. You know what I mean? Like, they always work their way up. They never start with a human. They're always just like, here, let me kill a family cat or whatever. Like, we'll kill, like, something small where everyone's like, oh, no, how did Scruffy die or whatever? Like, Hills Have Eyes did or whatever. And then they just work their way up to humans. To hate that the
also,
dog died.
The movie also had the balls to kill a child, which I did not expect. It brutally
ripped his fucking ear off.
Yeah.
Dude, that ear was like fucking 10 feet off his face when she was pulling it. That was so funny.
So gross.
So yeah, that's Megan. I don't think any of us are as high as the critic scores or whatever we'll have you see, but I don't think that's necessarily a detriment either. I think we're all into it. Oh, here's Jess back.
Yeah, Megan is very fun. Here's my biggest takeaway from Megan. This is a unique take. I'm not going to rehash literally anything any of you have said, because here's my biggest takeaway from Megan. After I watched Megan, I dropped Home Sweet Home Alone score from 15 to a 5. Unexpected ricochet. But it made me think of Home Sweet Home Alone and how do you do fellow kids and how fucking out of touch that movie was and how bad it was. And it made me despise Home Sweet Home Alone more and make it one of my least favorite movies of this century. It's a steaming pile of shit. I hate it. I hate that it was made. It wasn't made for anybody. It ruined everything I think about the original temporarily when I watched it. But yeah, but Megan is... I have an appreciation for the people who made Megan because they clearly get it. And I think that's why it works so well, because they get it. It never feels forced. And if you open your movie with fart jokes like that, with like Tim and Eric style fart jokes, I'm always going to like your movie. So that's my Megan thoughts. Fuck Home Sweet Home Alone. Piece of shit movie. Dog shit. Ass movie.
What was your score of Megan?
And Megan's good. Megan's score, I'd probably go like, I actually haven't hit a score on it yet. Megan, it's somewhere in the 80s. I'd say mid 80s. It's really well done. It's just a very fun, enjoyable movie.
You're above all of us by like 10 points plus. Yeah. We were all like 70, 75.
No, like I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed it. It's first of the year too. The first movie of the year is the worst movie to rate because you have nothing to go off of.
Right. But as I was saying earlier, Jeff, last year at this point it was 355, so I feel like
355, you know, a fucking Separation, which actually also stars, I think, the little girl from this movie.
Wow,
bad.
January Queen.
God, I hated that movie.
355, holy shit!
How about Tom Hanks getting fucking bodied by a little doll?
Yeah, seriously.
Also, that movie sucked. Fuck that movie. That movie stunk.
I can't wait for Man Called Otto.
I can't wait to not watch it.
Yep.
I thought that came out next week. I didn't know that came out.
You're just not a Man Called Otto stan. That's fair.
I clearly not. Yeah.
OTTO.
Got to step your game up, Chris.
I got it.
All right. So are we done with Megan?
Yeah, all done with Megan. Now we're moving in Bab.
All right. We'll talk about
in the Babs.
It's not even the main attraction. Megan's the main attraction. Nobody saw Babylon.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah, it's because like fucking bad.
It's
unenjoyable.
This is going to be interesting. I don't know really where I how I Babylon is tough.
Now we can't hear you.
I talked to Chris. I guess I can't do one ear. Hold on. What about now?
Yeah.
Chris and I talked about Babylon. I haven't not really talked about Babylon to Ken Jack or Gooch. I said if I would have given Babylon an 80, which I didn't, that may as well be a 100. Like, I don't know, like, that doesn't sound like it makes sense, but if you've seen Babylon, it should. Babylon, the latest movie from Damien Chazelle, Whiplash, La La Land, First Man. It's an epic. I don't know. It's like a Hollywood epic. I don't fucking know what it is. Like, it's epic. Not just – it's something. It is his – love letter maybe to Hollywood, the old Hollywood, the transition from silent films to the talkies, though even that is a tough way to describe it, because it's not
kind of is like
that happens in the movie. A lot of people in the movie, from fucking Tobey Maguire to Margot Robbie to Spike Jones.
Yeah.
I love a good Spike Jones cameo, by the way.
He needed that,
like when he's in Moneyball and he can't pronounce Jason Giambi's name. Babylon made no money. Nobody saw this movie. It cost a shitload to make.
80 mil.
Relative to how much.
It lost like $100 million. You know how insane that is?
Like, the funny thing is that I love Damien Chazelle. Yeah. I think he's got a great vision. And I think even – and I'm curious, like, Ken Jack, you especially. Like, I think even if you hate it, you at least got to respect, like, fuck, he went for it. Like, it may stink, but at least, like, he went for it.
Well, talk about it, yeah.
But I feel like you'll definitely agree on this. I like him. He's not a guy that I would think is, like Jordan – them giving Jordan Peele – carte blanche to make whatever he wants makes sense. His movies make money, they make buzz, people see them. I love Chazelle doesn't seem like that guy. Like, I'm kind of surprised he was given like the ability to do this.
He's not a blockbuster guy, he's a prestige guy. Movies traditionally don't make a lot of money. That's just not what they do.
He's not
especially
a director,
ones about old Hollywood.
He's not a director the average person knows. The average, like, my mom knows who Jordan Peele is. Like, you got no fucking idea who Damien Chazelle is.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't even part of the most famous moment for one of his movies. He was on stage, but like, he wasn't even the guy that realized the issue with the car when the best picture thing happened. I absolutely like this movie more than all three of you. I can say that without a doubt. There's a lot of this I did enjoy. I like how I love Hollywood movies about Hollywood. I like. That's no surprise. If you listen to the podcast, you know that's the case. But this movie is absolutely like a little too much of a mess. I don't mind if this movie was a mess and frantic. Like, I think the idea that it's a movie talking about the absolute absurdity and what happened during like the silent era is kind of a cool contrast. But it's just like a little, it's just too much. It's simply too much. And it's exhausting, and I don't mean in the Uncut Gems way. Like, it's just exhausting in a, like, oof. It's exhausting in a way where, like, I didn't really hate it like some people did, but I told multiple people to specifically go see Megan and not Babylon. I'm like, if you want to go see Babylon, like, just be prepared. Like, you're not having a fun night out. Like, it's an exhausting experience. Truly exhausting.
Mm-hmm. I think, and this is going to – well, what's your score, by the way?
My score review, I'm waiting to do my score.
Okay.
All right. So for
– I think Robbie may know it. I don't know, but it's in our data. But yeah, okay.
So for mine, I think – so I cut down Megan into pros and cons, and I can kind of do the same for Babylon. There's pros. There's good things about this movie without a doubt. Like, Margot Robbie is always Margot Robbie. She's excellent in everything, even if the movie doesn't land. Diego Calva, I think, was awesome in his introduction to us. Really, really good. And there are two scenes in this movie that are Oscar caliber scenes. Like, two scenes. That's it. And the whole thing. 3 hours long, 3+ hours long of fucking, like, erratic mess. But there are two outstanding scenes that are Oscar caliber. And it's Gene Smart explaining to Brad Pitt about how his time has come and all that. And then that really frantic first talky scene with Margot Robbie where they're trying to, like, put everything together. Awesome. So those two scenes are like Oscar caliber scenes, right? And the camera work was really stellar, which was like a kind of a regular standard for all Chazelle stuff. Like, he really loves that one shot where he zooms in on the actor, zooms out, gets a full breadth of everything, and zooms right back in. He did it like 10 times in this movie. I think the humor really worked, especially PJ Byrne, who was like not the director, but the assistant director in those scenes.
Rugrat from Wolf of Wall Street? Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
He's always funny, man.
He killed it.
Yeah.
The production design was also just rock solid. Like, you're immersed in that. You feel like it's 1920s, 30s Hollywood and all that, and that works great. I think the cons for this are that I mentioned this, I think, right when I saw it. It's the ultimate heat check movie. It is the ultimate heat check. It is Damien Chazelle having enough Hollywood capital to have enough creative control to swing for the fences, except this is like a dribbler to first. Like Jeff was saying, like, he respects that he swung for the fences. But that hit being a dribbler to first sucks. It's inexcusably an hour too long. Like, no reason anyone could possibly give me would explain how the final cut ended up with that runtime. Yep. Nothing. And what makes it worse is that you can pick out every moment that works and every moment that can easily be stripped away from time. Like the Tobey Maguire subplot thing, you strip that away, you take back 45 minutes of this movie. Yep. And basically, it achieved nothing. It did nothing for the movie whatsoever. And even with all that length, the frantic nature of the whole thing makes it feel very incoherent. And I like that you mentioned Uncut Gems, Jeff, because like it reminded me of that sort of anxious feel you get with Uncut Gems. But there's always a clear objective in Uncut Gems from start to finish, right? Like, you're between point A and point B. You don't ever really get that feeling. Right. You're zigzagging all over the place. You don't have a clear objective in sight or destination in sight throughout this movie. And I think that the ending to Babylon, is maybe one of the worst I've ever seen out of a prestige movie in a long time. And I understand the intent of it, right? Like, you want to showcase what Calva had helped built and all that, like the character. But the presentation is nauseating and so bad, and I don't understand how somebody in Chazelle's camp wasn't like, this is a terrible idea. This is a really bad idea, especially for a big budget movie, because you will never get a big budget movie again if you make this ending for a movie that's meant to be shown out for people. Like, that's just never going to work. So I landed for this movie. I'm on a 59 out of 100. This movie, and 59 out of 100, by the way, comes entirely on the back of Margot Robbie, Diego Calva, and his like general performance throughout it, and those two scenes, and that's it. Everything else did not work for me one bit. So it's just a really, really big disappointment. I think we did a draft of our most anticipated movies for 2022. It was my number one pick. Yeah. Like, I was so pumped for this movie. I fucking love Damien Chazelle. I love that this cast was incredible, super stacked. The topic itself, even like it should be good. It is just such an egregious mess of a movie that really needed like a no man. You know what I mean? You need like yeah. Chazelle needed an editor. He needed somebody to say no to stuff. He needed someone to say this is not digestible for an audience, and he didn't have that. And this movie just ended up being a really frantic swing for the fences that didn't work. And it just, it bothered me a lot, especially because I had back to back this with Avatar when because I did the screenings back to back. And Avatar was the same length, but never feels long. And then I watched this one, and all I could feel was the length of this movie from like the hour and a half mark. So really big disappointment for me. 59 out of 100.
I agree with a lot of your negative points. I do. But there's too much good in this for me to drop this movie down into the 50s. There's some parts of this movie, and there's 10-15 minute stretches where it's as good as anything released last year. That 15 minutes on set was...
That was awesome.
I mean, that was like LSD straight to my brain. That was incredible. The performances two Oscar scenes. Great. I mean, when it's good, it's like... Holy fuck, this is cool.
Right.
And when it's bad, Margot Robbie projectile vomiting at a hoity-toity party, it's like, what was the thought here? What was the thought? Like, why are we doing this in this movie?
It did like the James Rolfe elephant diarrhea dump on someone's head within the first 5 minutes.
The guy getting pissed on, like, also, I think James, or not James, Damien Chazelle, I don't know if he parties a lot.
No, he's a jazz nerd.
Because some of this stuff was like, this is like if a narc tried to make like what partying looks like. It's like, it just some of the stuff I was like, oh, that's not really what it would be like. But like I said, like there's just some stuff in here that's just too fucking good for me to drop this into the 50s. I'm at a 75. There's a movie in here that is like,
oh wow, okay.
There's a movie in here that is up into the 90s. Very clearly. You cut this down, I think it goes up in the 90s.
If you just put out those two scenes, this would be a 90s movie.
I get the point. I get the points they were trying to make with the Tobey Maguire stuff. Like the symbolism. Like I kind of think they're going for like a Dante's Inferno of Hollywood, like going down deeper and deeper through that each level. But like it's like we don't need this. It just is unnecessary. It's also a confusing movie where you can't tell if it needs more or like, I think it would have worked really well as a miniseries. You give this 6 hours and give it time to wrap up each storyline. I think it plays a lot better. Like, what's his name? Adepo? The trumpet player. Who played the trumpet player? That storyline got cast to the side so fast, but it was a very interesting storyline and something I would have liked to see more of. Same thing with Feng Wei, the writer.
Yeah.
That would have been interesting to see more of. But these storylines get set up and then wrapped up so quickly that all you're left with is Margot Robbie and Diego Calva just kind of frantically running around for the last hour.
Yeah.
It's just a frustrating movie. I think that's more than anything. It's very frustrating. And
I gave it a 76. My score reveal is not quite as crazy because you just gave it a 75. So I'll just say that.
I mean, there's stuff that I really love. And that's where
kind of the point what Ken Jack said, though, like the crazy thing about Chazelle getting this much leash, it's not even the money. It's like Ken Jack said, it's the fact that like nobody just like edited this fucking thing. Like the fact that they just said, yeah, you're good, bro. Let's just send it out. Like that's kind of in an era where like Taika Waititi is told to cut his fucking Thor movie down. It's like that's crazy. They were just like, yeah, Chazelle. Rip it, but brother.
That's the thing, too. It's like the two-headed beast of that, giving this movie like an $80 million budget and then saying, don't edit it. That doesn't make sense to me. Like those two things to feel like if you're going to give a movie a big budget, the studio, you would imagine, would have more creative control over that edit. But I guess they were just like, hey, man, this dude is making Oscar movies. He's a beast, which he is. He still is, even if this movie isn't good, is like, it's just weird. Just weird. He needed someone there to edit.
How awesome would it have been at that montage he just threw in like Whiplash and La La Land?
It'd be funny if he pulled in like fucking like, you know, John Carter or whatever, like just like a different, like something out of left field.
I also got retroactively even angrier at this movie and making me sound like I hate it, but I went back and watched.
You do. You just want to give it a 75 because you like those scenes.
Well, because I was home with my family, so we turned on Singing in the Rain, and it's like this is the movie. This is the good movie.
Like, yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
That's the score. Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I'm in between all you guys. I'm at a 65 with this. This movie is the textbook definition of a mess. You look up movie mess in the dictionary, you're going to mm-hmm. find Babylon. I'm with all you guys, but there's too many good things about it for me to hate it. Margot Robbie is excellent. You know, I love the way Damien Chazelle shoots his movies. I mean, he's a masterful director. The big problem with this movie and the runtime, obviously, is a huge reason for this, is that it's so goddamn unfocused. Because the movie, like, the parts in which it focuses on what it should be focusing on, which is this love story, kind of tragic love story that takes place in the transitional time from when silent films turned into talking pictures. That's what the movie should have been. And when it's focusing on that, I liked it. But then you have the subplot with Brad Pitt, and you have the subplot with the trumpet player, and you have a lot of just random scenes that kind of don't connect, don't go anywhere. I'm with you about the ending. I thought it was super self-indulgent, as was so much of this movie. I mean, it's smut. It's really well-made smut. I mean, when the opening scene in your movie is an elephant shitting in somebody's face, you know you're probably in for a wild ride. And the first, like, 20, 30 minutes, I'm like, he's true to his word here, but it constantly frustrates you because every time you feel like you're about to go, you know, enter that next level and you're going to get really into it, it takes a detour. It's not a terrible movie by any means. I completely understand the divisiveness, though. I think because I've seen this movie on people's bottom 10 lists and I've seen it on people's top 10 lists.
Some people think it's fucking perfect.
Yeah, but I get that because it swings for the fences so consistently that I understand why people are latching onto it and thinking that it is like one of the better movies of the year, but it is so in your face with its style and with the story that I understand why people loathe it and think it's one of the weaker movies of the year. So I have it at a 65. I think on a technical level, it's great. It's so obvious, much like with his other movies as well. Damien Chazelle is so passionate about this time in Hollywood. And because of that, I just wish it were a better movie because I think that that's one thing that he usually does such a great job of. Like, I think I speak for all of us. I don't know about you guys, but like, I don't give a shit about jazz drumming. And yet when I watch Whiplash, it's the most important thing in the world. He did that with La La Land. He did it with First Man.
He does love fucking jazz, too.
He loves shoehorning jazz into his movies more than Kevin Smith loves putting Star Wars references into his movies. I mean, he just mm-hmm. – that man loves his jazz. But, you know, God, it adds to his style, and the movie looks good. I will say none of us brought him up. I thought bizarrely because I usually like him a lot as an actor – I thought Brad Pitt was pretty forgettable in this.
Yeah,
I was a bit surprised because usually, like, we've seen him in movies recently. So, you know, the quality of the films varies, but it seems like we've seen him in movies having a ton of fun, you know, whether it be like Once Upon a Time in Hollywood or Bullet Train or something like that. It seems like he was kind of stuck in one gear with this performance. An underwritten character, I felt like.
You know what's weird, too, is that he's like one of the few actors shortlisted from this movie for a lot of awards. You know what I mean? And like, I don't think that's right at all.
The only one to me that deserves recognition.
I think Diego and Margot Robbie, I think both deserve it. Diego Calvo, I think, was awesome for especially for a debut like that.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean, Margot Robbie is such a fearless actress and she throws herself completely into this role. If this was the Siskel and Ebert scale, it'd be like thumb right in the middle. Like there's so many admirable things about it that I want to recommend it, but I think the average moviegoer is going to be annoyed as shit by this movie, and I can't really blame
it. Here's the best way, I think, to describe this movie is that it would be best watched in one of those movie clips YouTube things where they put down part one, part two, part two, part three, whatever. Like, just the two parts where they do that scene where Gene Smart talks to Brad Pitt, and they do that scene where they keep trying to talk you for the first time. Like, those two clips on YouTube clips are going to go nuts. Everything else is going to get no views.
I feel like this is one of those movies that's a great point, Ken Jack, because I feel like if you took any random 5-minute snippet from this movie and watched it, you'd be like, oh, wow, this movie's going to be great. But it's just when it's so much of it is disjointed and disconnected from the rest of the narrative that It's hard to really get engaged. And ultimately, I just didn't care that much about the characters either. I found outside those main two were fine, but I found a lot of the rest of it, just in terms of the writing, to be relatively bland. Yeah.
Like, when they go to visit like Margot Robbie's mom in like a mental hospital, like why is that even in the movie? It's sort of, it came up. It didn't come up again.
Zero times.
No purpose, really, because you already knew she had a traumatic childhood. Like, so why do we need to show the audience this? Like, there's so much stuff that could be taken out and given more lead time to other stuff. I don't know.
You're also, I'm just kind of realizing that Diego Calvo was Forrest Gump and Margot Robbie was Jenny.
Yeah.
This is the Forrest Gump story of this guy failing upwards, except for the fact that, like, I guess he quit on his own. This is very, it's kind of funny.
Also, like, they ran, like, a Star is Born. They ran that play for Brad Pitt's character, more or less. Like,
yes.
That, there's so much stuff in here that's, and Damien Chazelle loves Hollywood and loves, all like, loves movies. So, like, I don't blame him too much for that, because when it's done right, like, it works. But, like, I just feel like a lot of this shit just was not done correctly.
It's cool that I like it's really neat that like he had such a cynical look. Not even, I don't know if cynical is the right word, but it's not a very positive look compared to La La Land, for example. Now, granted, that's not fully Hollywood. It's like music in Hollywood. But, and that, I guess, had some cynicism in it as well, like, you know, with him going mainstream and stuff. But for the most part, it was a pretty rosy look at things in the end, where this like had a lot of negativity and it did end rosy. But like, it's not exactly the fucking, you know, it's not Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling dancing on the fucking side of the road. Like, it's much more dour,
dirty,
and grounded, and negative. Right. It's dirty. Well, I like that. That's cool. The ambition of being crazy and chaotic is cool. It just, you're just like, dude, holy shit, rein it in like a hair. Because like, if he had reined it in a hair, like there's something there. Like, this is – it's unfortunate that this is such a box office bomb, because it's not like – like, I mean, we watched some bad movies this year. There are some bad fucking movies, and this doesn't deserve to be in that category.
No, absolutely.
Even someone like Kendrick, like Kendrick, you rated it in the 50s. Like, it's not even in the bottom half.
No.
Of your movies of the year. So it's like – but with all of that said, no one's seeing it. It's obviously a fucking disaster for the studio. Yeah, it's a shame.
What's annoying, too, is when you make fun of it, people are like Babylon defenders are like, you don't get it. It was supposed to be frantic and extravagant and all those things. Like, no, I get it.
Yeah.
But it didn't do any of those things with a particular purpose. Like, you can have an objective to do these things and still not be a good movie. Like, you know what I mean? That's the even more frustrating thing about the discourse about it.
Yeah, it's not like you don't get that it's frantic. You're like, wait a second. It's intentionally crazy?
It's supposed to be doing this? It's supposed to be showing boobs and butts and coke and fucking diarrhea dumps from elephants? I didn't realize.
I think,
And, like, that's the thing. Like, I thought I'd be one of the people who thought this is a perfect movie. I was like, I think I'm going to love it. And I didn't. But it's also one of those where sometimes, you know, people fall into that trap, and I'm sure we've all done it at times where you like something and maybe you don't realize it at first, but you're liking because of the idea of it. But like, just because it's frantic and chaotic doesn't mean it's good. It's like, it's unfortunately possible.
Yeah. Just because a movie does a thing on purpose doesn't mean it's good, which is, I think, what a lot of our complaint was with Terrifier 2, where it's like, yeah, this is what the movie's trying to do. We get that. Still don't like it. Still don't think it's good. It's like, that's where I think the difference comes with some people. And they're like, you don't get it. You're supposed to be like this. It's like, well, then it's still bad. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if you're trying to do it or not.
Someone made that
big argument. Win in 2022.
Yeah.
Someone made that argument.
Making Gooch watch that movie.
The Munsters. Someone made that argument for the Munsters. They're like, you don't get it. It's supposed to be bad. Ugh. They're like, it's supposed to be bad. I'm like, what?
Well, then it did its job too well.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even bad.
It's like, well, if it's supposed to be bad, then you're rewarding it by giving it a low score. Like, you're giving it what it wants then. It's so fucking weird.
That's where I stand on, like, Money Plane, too, though. Like, I know people are like, Money Plane's nuanced. Like, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know about that. But even Money Plane, I had a better time. The Munsters is fucking, the Munsters stinks.
Yeah, Rob Zombie, woof.
What was he thinking? What was he thinking with that movie?
I think that movie made Chris the number one Rob Zombie hater alive.
I might be. Yeah, I know. Yeah, that's all eight of them.
You're like Rick Grimes.
I actually think that my least favorite movie of the year might have been Poker Face with Russell Crowe.
Ooh.
Really?
What a call.
I didn't watch it.
It's pretty fucking bad. We have a coworker, Jake. He works on the social team. He's like, hey, I saw three movies over break I meant to talk to you about.
That kid has terrible taste in movies.
Bad taste in movies.
He does, but he told me what he watched, and he watched like two well-known movies. And he's like, I didn't like this one. I go, oh, I like that one. I like this. He goes, then I watched this movie with Russell Crowe. And I'm like, he's not going to say Poker Face. He goes, Poker Face? I'm like, how did you even land on that? Like, where did you even arrive at Poker Face?
Funny Jake Nosek side story. He once told the entire office that he could throw one of those Nerf footballs, the ones that make like the whistle. Like, you know, the ones that you can throw really far. He's like, I could throw this an entire city like avenue. And we're like, okay, let's go do it. And he brings it outside. He maybe threw it like 20 yards. He maybe made it 20 yards. This is the type of guy that goes to see Poker Face.
His favorite thing, again, this is a guy that works in our office, Jake Malasek. He went around asking everyone in the office if they wanted to go see the Minions with him for like a month. And then he never saw it. Yeah. He never fucking went.
Dude, I love Malasek. He's the best.
Like, he predated the meme. Like, he was even asking before people were going in suits. And he never – I was – like, it was 3 weeks went by. I'm like, what'd you think about Minions? He's like, I didn't see it. I was like, what the fuck? Fuck. All right, that's Babylon and Megan. I would look up what's coming out next year, but the internet doesn't work at this fucking internet company that I'm currently at. What comes out next week? What's out next week? Anything?
Plane with Gerard Butler.
Plane has to be the one. I can't. Oh, wait, no, there's another one. Well, not a movie, but The Last of Us comes out on the 16th. We should definitely do something with that.
We should be doing, yeah. I think
I'm excited about that.
We should probably do weekly discussions on that one.
Okay. Yeah, big time prestige release or attempted prestige. Sunday, right?
It's Sundays? Okay. Cool.
Yeah, Plane is literally the only thing coming out next week.
Hell yeah. No, we got to do that.
Plane is getting a big social push.
Looks awesome.
Yeah.
Like, it's a lot of ads on social, I've noticed. And yeah, it's something.
I think you put their account on fucking. You put their account on tweet alerts from the LCB account, so I get their tweets too on my phone. And it'll just be like, POV, you're Gerard Butler, and it's just a picture of Gerard Butler. Like, their social team fucking rocks.
Their social team's so funny.
Well, I never know. I never know what – I haven't put a movie on alerts in a while, so it's been – Gooch has done it a few times where I get the notification, and it takes about 20 notifications for me to go, wait, what the fuck? Why am I getting these right now? Like, why am I still – the worst is we do have notifications on for trailers and stuff. The worst is when you'll have, like, a studio you need to have on.
Mm-hmm.
But then they'll do, like, a live Q&A on Twitter, and your phone just explodes.
Yeah.
You're like, I just want the Guardians 3 trailer. I don't want, like, Disney Plus live tweeting Good
Disney's
Dinosaur.
The worst
like, I don't
with
need
that.
This right now.
They're the worst with that.
Netflix is the worst because they'll retweet literally anyone who says anything positive about one of their properties. You could be like, the new season of You is pretty good.
Be like from @eggfart22, and he's like, oh man, new season of Ginny and Georgia really rocks. Retweet 20 different times during the day.
It's like mildly good. Like review, and they'll be like, "Oh,
like
yeah.
this scale." Yeah, it's like a 6 out of 10 review basically version, and they're just like, "Yeah, that's good enough." Oh man.
2023 movies, top 5 most anticipated, not a draft. I don't know how much overlap we'll have, though now I'm looking at my list, I feel like we might.
Yeah.
I'll go first, and then we'll go Ken, Jack, Gooch, and Chris. Me, number 5, Creed 3.
Mm.
The Creed 3 trailer was very good. Really excited to see Jonathan Majors. I think everyone agrees Jonathan Majors is on a heater right now about to be on one. And then Michael B. Jordan, like, how is he as a director? So Creed 3 for me is an easy – actually, it wasn't an easy. I didn't expect to have it in there. It beat out a couple things that I think other people would have on their lists. But Creed 3 for me, number 5.
One of the movie insiders I follow on Twitter, he said that Creed 3 got the highest test scores from audiences last year on test screenings. Like, he said, like, audiences are going to fucking love this movie.
Damn.
Yeah, I could see it. Yeah. Premise is cool. Like, I'm excited.
It was just beaten out by my number 5, which is John Wick 4. And the reasoning is, like, you might not think, like, hey, it's an action movie. Why is it most anticipated? Like, John Wick movies are always good. They're 3 for 3, which is so rare in any franchise of any genre whatsoever. And I think John Wick 4, with the cast they attached onto it as well, I'm super pumped up for it. Really, really excited to see what they do and where they go with it, especially because they're eventually have to close out Keanu Reeves' chapter. The dude's like 60. They're going to have to do something eventually.
Gooch. Who else is in that one too with him?
They added in Donnie Yen and also like Scott Adkins and a couple other people.
One of the Skarsgårds.
Yeah, one of the Skarsgårds. A couple other people too. I forget exactly. Fuck. There was another big name, but I forget.
Also, how about John Wick being confirmed to appear in? I didn't expect it, but he's going to appear in. Yeah, Ballerina. The Honor of the Arm. Yeah. But my number five. Killers of the Flower Moon.
Dang.
Finally coming out this year. I don't know if it's going to get a theater release. It's an Apple TV project. I'm not sure how they handle their big stuff. But, I mean, it's Scorsese. It's De Niro. It's Plemons. And most importantly, it's DiCaprio. Really, really interesting true story. I don't know how it's going to play to a general audience because it's pretty fucking dark. I mean, it deals with taking away land from Native American tribes, and like it's very dark. I'm looking forward to it. I'm just saying I don't know how much of a general audience excitement there's going to be for it once the first trailer comes out. But yeah, no, it's fine. It was supposed to come out last year, but just didn't. I don't know what really happened there. Just I guess they didn't feel safe about it being on their slate. But yeah, looking forward to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Frasier man, can't wait.
My number five is same as Ken Jackson's, John Wick 4. John Wick, I think if we talk about original characters like of the 21st century, I think John Wick is easily one of the most recognizable in terms of franchise characters. The way that this world has been built has been really fascinating to me. I mean, you start off with a guy that just, you know, had his dog kidnapped and it turned into this whole like underground world of assassins.
Dog.
Yeah, like and Keanu Reeves kicks ass in these movies. So, I'm excited for John Wick 4. The way the third one ended, you're kind of, you know, you're definitely ready to see the next chapter.
Those three are all on HBO Max, by the way, if you're looking to stream them. All three just went to streaming earlier this month.
I love the John Wick lore. Like,
yeah, right?
It's a really good lore.
To me, the lore is better than the movies, if that makes sense. Like, my favorite parts of the movies are just learning about that world. Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
My number four, Spider-Man into the Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse Part 1. Very excited for that. I'm kind of bummed that Nicolas Cage is not back as Spider-Man Noir. That's kind of
he had a really weird comp about it. He was like, they didn't ask him.
That's kind of wild.
Yeah, it's very odd. I guess maybe the character's wrapped in that sense. I don't know. Yeah. But I'm very excited for that. I've never been so excited about the tease for animation. Like, the way they've talked about the animation for this movie is just like, you're like, okay, I got to see what this shit's like. But, I mean, the first one's one of the greatest comic book movies ever, one of the best animated movies ever made. Unreal shoes to fill, but I kind of just trust them because they've had such a painstaking process making this, and they didn't rush it out, right? Like, it's been a while now, so like there's just a trust level I have with it. Very excited for it. Ken Jack.
My next one is going to be Dune Part 2. Dune Part 1 was obviously awesome in a lot of different ways. I feel like I wanted so much more from that. Like, I wanted a more complete feel to it, so I feel like Dune Part 2 is going to make Dune Part 1 better. And I'm really excited to see how that works out. So, shout out Denis Villeneuve and the boys. They added someone else in the reshoots. No, didn't they just add someone?
Yes, they added
Willem Dafoe, right?
Willem Dafoe? Yeah.
No, wait. No.
Wait, it's not?
Was it?
I thought it was. I thought...
I'm trying to think.
They added a big name in after. And I know they were all wrapped with...
Was it Donald Sutherland? I don't know, because I just watched Hunger Games. That might be why I'm saying that.
There's a Hunger Games thing coming out next year, too. Yeah. Or this year.
Rachel Zegler.
Yeah.
Oh, Tim Blake Nelson. Tim Blake Nelson.
Right. Yeah, different great character actor.
I don't even know.
I don't know he's playing,
to be honest. Like, thinking through the characters, I'm not sure who that would be.
Don't they have everybody covered at this
just
point?
Just a random cowboy in the middle.
He got recast as Paul. He's just Paul Atreides now.
he's Leto Atreides, or Leo Atreides. Yeah. Turns himself into a sandworm.
Gooch.
My number four is going to be Barbie.
Let's go.
I know it sounds like a meme like pick, but like Greta Gerwig's a really fucking good director, and this cast is awesome. The initial teaser, it looks great. I just really got a great feeling about this one. I really do. I think it could be like a huge cultural movie too. Like,
yeah,
there's gonna be a lot of chatter around this and a lot of talk. Like, I could see more people talking about this movie than Oppenheimer, which comes out the same weekend. just because it has a wider net to talk about. Like, more people are going to be seeing this. It just has a wider audience. You can take family.
I can't believe they got those coming out in the same weekend.
Right.
Dude, I rewatched Little Women over break. Dude, that movie's so fucking good. It's so good.
The Bob Odenkirk coming in with like the glass breaking, like fucking stone cold, is incredible.
Oh my gosh. So yeah, no, Barbie, I'm looking forward to it.
Four for you, Chris.
Creed 3. You know, to be honest, I wasn't that. I love Creed 1. I love the first Creed. I was indifferent towards the second one. I didn't think it was not as good as the trailer made it out to be. I was marginally disappointed. Really like the trailer for the third one, though. And Jonathan Majors, yeah, you talk about a guy who's either on a heater or on the verge of being on a heater. He's been everywhere lately. Tons of charisma. I like the idea of him, you know, playing the antagonist here. And Michael B. Jordan's always good. And his directorial debut as well, which should be interesting. So, you know, one of the things that made the first Creed so special was the way it was directed by Ryan Coogler. So hopefully we can recapture some of that magic. That's my number four.
One of the best parts of Creed 2, if you go back and watch it, though, I will say, like, one of my favorite parts is the end when Tessa Thompson's character is singing her song and he comes out for the fight. Fucking badass scene. Mm-hmm. One of the more badass entrances. Just no.
Her song yeah. Stunk. Let's be honest.
I hate those. The walkout song?
Yeah, I don't like her music. Not my tempo.
You'd want some fucking bluegrass bullshit.
No, Chazelle boxing movie. That would be entertaining.
Yeah, come out to Justin Hurwitz.
My number three is Oppenheimer. My number one and two are probably the two most anticipated movies I've ever had in my life. So that's it's like Oppenheimer is, and like I don't mean that, like I mean that very seriously too. Oppenheimer is going to be. Man, this is a mistake saying this. Oppenheimer is going to be one of the top five movies released next year. I have no idea how it's not going to be unreal. I know, Chris, you were pretty indifferent on the trailer. Like, I was so opposite. There was something about it. I'm like, fuck, this is going to be so fucking good. I'm going to be disgustingly let down if this movie is not at least a 95 or above for me.
Wow.
My expectations are so high for Oppenheimer, and in a different way than my next two movies. Like this one, I think this could be a best picture type winner for him, and I think it. I hope it is. That's my expectations. So, Ken Jack,
my next one is going to be Barbie. For a lot of the reasons Gooch said too, where it's just like I think this is going to be a genuinely good movie, and I miss seeing Margot Robbie in actually good movies. You know what I mean? And even almost to the same extent, like Ryan Gosling's had like a little bit of a break from like an actually like great, fine performances and everything, but like not really like a really good movie. So super excited for that. Just looks fun, punchy, like an entertaining time at the movies. Like Oppenheimer, I think is going to be a little bit more of like a more melancholy feel to it, a little darker, a little drearier. And I think Barbie's going to be the polar opposite, which is going to be a nice, like, you know, I'd say double feature for us on July 21st or 22nd, whatever day that is that's coming up.
I hope theaters
do It's going to be a movie that you...
I hope theaters do some, like, sort of promo. That'd be a fun thing for theaters to do. Like, the double feature promo for Oppenheimer and Barbie.
It's going to be a movie, I guarantee you, that we see, and then, like, you hear friends talking about going to the movie, you're like... You're gonna see Barbie? It's like I'll go again. Like it's gonna be one of those. Like the teaser was perfect. It didn't show too much. It gave you like this whimsical, fun, wacky feel. Like it was the perfect amount of that movie. Because I feel like nowadays teasers are almost like they're just like Marvel teasers are just full trailers basically.
Yeah.
But like that was the perfect classic teaser. You're like, oh fuck.
Yeah.
Super colorful. Gooch.
My number three is also Oppenheimer. This would be number one if it wasn't for Tenet, which I think was much like Babylon, just a heat check, like we talked about for Nolan. But I think he reels it back in here and gets back on track.
Yeah, but he might have scored a couple points on Tenet where Chazelle, or it's like Ken just said, Chazelle swung for the fences and dribbled at the first.
Yeah.
I still don't get Tenet. I've lied so many times. You know, I've lied so many times about
you big dumb moron.
I can't get it. I don't understand it. But Oppenheimer seems a little bit more linear. I think I'll understand it this time. And like the cast, is just, it really is insane. He really did say, give me everyone. And the stories about how these people got casted, they said they didn't even fucking read for parts. They just like were asked, do you want to be in a Christopher Nolan movie? And they were just like, yes. Like that's that's some serious clout. Like just being able to get RDJ on the phone and him being like, yeah, I'll do it. Matt Damon. Who else they got?
The Cavs list is the same person.
Jack Quaid.
Josh Peck.
Josh Peck.
Yeah, Josh Peck.
Fucking RDJ. All these people, man. It's crazy.
All right. Chris.
My number three is a movie. I have no idea if I'm going to enjoy it, but it's on here because I'm just so ready for it to come out. Because we've been talking about it for a decade, The Flash. I have no idea how much I'm going to enjoy The Flash, if at all. But there's so much. I don't know if there's ever been a movie with this much baggage behind it that had this much like we need this to be good energy. I think it's going to be a weird experience, and I'm looking forward to watching it. I don't know if I'll enjoy it or not, but it's something I'm definitely excited to see.
Mm-hmm. I'm very excited for it.
They've backed him so much.
Yeah.
Like it has to, it must be a little good.
Dude, people are saying this movie's good. Like people are saying the screeners keep going well. Like people like this movie. Like apparently it's good, which is hilarious.
How much is Keaton in the movie?
I think they may have taken.
Like he wasn't.
I think they took out a lot of his stuff. I think they took out a lot of the stuff that sets up further movies down the line.
Fuck.
But who knows?
That bums me out.
He might be in it a lot. Who knows?
Yeah.
But I do know they took out a ton of the stuff that like was setting up down the line movies. Because of course they're just not doing down the line movies for the DC.
Fucking Supergirl's in it. Like it's wild.
Yeah.
Mm.
Very excited.
Andy Muscanetti. Is that how you say his name?
Muschietti,
there you go.
Oh.
My number two.
Hey, we should do that, by the way. Post that from the main account. Post just like look up a picture of the most stereotypical like Guido or like old school Sopranos type character, and just post like a random like fact about Andy Muschietti. Just be like, Andy Muschietti says The Flash is going to be great this year, and just like with a quote card and everything.
You're a fucking rat if you don't like my movie.
No, just make it the most like benign like regular quote a regular director would make, but make it like the most cartoonishly like fucking Tony Baloney Sopranos character. On the
Andy Muschietti is the guy who sold Speed to Moltisanti to give to Meadow.
Yes, exactly.
My number two. If we had to pre-rate movies in terms of how much we're excited for them, my one and two would be 100s out of 100s. I know Gooch got to go, so I'll rip through this. They're 1A. They're just tied. Mission Impossible: Dead Reckoning, Part One. I mean. Mm-hmm. It's going to be another list. I won't even say anything. I mean, just watch him jump off that fucking cliff. I don't need anything else. Like,
why
what
is
more
he
going
to have
need?
To do that? Why? What in the secret agent's like a mission is going to require him to do that? I need to know.
He's undercover as an evil Knievel cosplayer.
Yeah, exactly. I need to know, man.
I'll move on because I know it's going to be another list. So, Ken Jack.
My number two is Oppenheimer for a lot of the reasons you guys said. Christopher Nolan, one of the true unicorns in the entire world of cinema, in that like he makes movies that they blow up the box office and are critically really well received. Like no one does that really. Like even you look at James Cameron, yeah, he blows up the box office critically. He doesn't always get there. But like Tenet, just Christopher Nolan manages to do that with basically every single movie he makes. So I'm super excited what he's going to do with something that's like number one based on a very true gritty kind of fucked up story and all that. And with this just massive cast, so really pumped up for Oppenheimer.
Gooch.
My number two, same as you, Jeff. And my number one is probably going to be the same as well. Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part One. I mean, I did a complete rewatch, or not complete, because I didn't do 1, 2, 3, but I did 4, 5, 6, the good ones.
Complete rewatch because I didn't watch half the franchise.
Oh, whatever. I watched the good ones. And I watched them with my dad, and we did it all one day. And like after every single one, he'd just be like, is there another one? I'm like, hell yeah.
By the way, 1, 2, 3, they might all have problems on their own. Number three has one of the best Philip Seymour Hoffman villain roles maybe ever. And then
and
number
one,
one
is good.
Is good.
Two stinks.
Yeah, two is
two,
no good.
Two is not
the long
good.
Hair one's bad. Yeah.
Yeah, that's two. That's,
yeah. There's a clear step up in the front, like a vibe change in the franchise once you get to four, though.
I don't think four, I would say, is worse than – I need to double check my rankings on that, but one is definitely better than four. And three, I would say, maybe is better than four.
I like four quite a bit.
Five and six are just different level.
Five and six are fucking. And honestly,
dude, but four's got Paula.
I am so fired.
Paula.
No, and as Jeremy Renner, that's our boy Jeremy. Oh, no, by the way, it looks like he's improving in the hospital. That shout out to Jeremy Renner.
Yes. Robin Thicke's ex-wife, who he wrote an album for, and she's still there.
What sold more, Tickets to Babylon or the Paula Patton CD from Robin? I gotta say, by the way, Kittredge coming back, that character it's coming cool back has me. I love that. Oh, I'm so fucking amped. Mm-hmm. So yes, Haley so Atwell excited too, for that movie.
Like, she yeah, looks like, yeah, true. She looks like she's gonna be a huge part in the movie.
Palm Clement.
The trailer was. That's a really good trailer. Like that's a really fucking good trailer.
The repurposing that theme song is just so fucking good, and the way they've continued to repurpose it and like stretch out, make it more dramatic. Yeah, Chris.
I'll be quick here. Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 is my number two. Marvel needs this, man. You know, just a good, positive vibes send off to these characters. I really do think all of them are done after this. Like, I don't think they really have any interest in doing any other Marvel stuff, but beyond what James Gunn's done with them. I want to see a conclusion to this arc, to these characters. It's been a wild journey, and I really hope they stick the landing with this one. I really am rooting.
I think Pratt's going to stay, to be honest.
He could, yeah. But I know Batista said he's done, and I kind of think – I don't have any – you know, I don't know any spoilers. I kind of think Rocket's going to die. So, yeah, I think that we're going to get some sense of finality to this.
I mean, Dave Batista may as well come out and just say Drax dies in the movie, by the way. Like,
you think Drax dies?
Yeah, I think it's like almost cut and dry that Drax is dead. We'll see. And we'll see how we'll see when every Hollywood actor is lined up for Secret Wars if they really say they want to come back.
Yeah,
or not.
Exactly.
We'll see if the tune changes rather quick on that one.
Yeah.
I would agree with you on Rocket though too. My number one is Dune Part Two. I can't believe that we're getting Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, and Dune Part Two in the same year. I've become Dune obsessed. I've read half the book in 2 years. I'm getting there. I'm doing a good job. I view the first Dune as like a near masterpiece. And the fact we haven't seen anything yet, like we got to be seeing something soon.
Yeah, exactly.
What's the maybe with Ant-Man?
Something.
Maybe with Ant-Man.
Or you know what? Fuck it. We're less than a year out. Don't show me anything. Like I am just so. I mean, I saw the thing 5 times in IMAX. It's just, it was an unreal experience. I'm so fucking excited for Dune 2.
I'm obsessed with Dune 2. Dune your mom.
You gotta say, by the way, I was just about to say, Dune Part 2. Dune 2 does not work.
Yeah.
You gotta add the part in there.
Exactly. mine's gonna be Dead Reckoning Part 1 for a ton of reasons. Like Mission Impossible Fallout was like one of the greatest action movies of the last like 10 years easily. Fucking awesome time. Tom Cruise just dedicated to being the biggest action star, giving everyone the best action performances ever. And yeah, the cliff jump, need to know why that went down, and I can't wait to see it, seeing him on top of fighting on top of trains in Romania or whatever. I can't wait.
Number one, the Marvels. Just kidding. Let's go. Dune, baby.
Yeah, the Karma Sutra right there. The book on how Dune.
I love Dune. Like Dune, I remember the first time I read the book. I think I read it in like 2 days, and it is a thick ass book. I could not put it down. The first movie, all the complaints people have about the first movie will go away. I think, Kenjack, you brought it up. The second movie will be in service to make the first one even better. The movie, I cannot wait. I'm with Jeff. I think in terms of big sci-fi, you can't do much better than what the first Dune did. I mean, it is fucking amazing. I can't wait to see Austin Butler come in as Fader Alpha, who's an awesome, awesome character. Florence Pugh coming in too, like one of the best actresses working right now. This is Denny doesn't miss. Denny just doesn't miss. Like so, what?
That is true.
Like this is a lock to be at least. I think at least great, if not fucking phenomenal.
Yeah, agreed.
It's also the Dune Part One has already allied for the oop for Dune Part Two to win all the Oscars. I mean, it basically did. Like, it won everything, but like it won all the shit that you'd expect it to win at the Oscars. So it's like, yeah, we'll see what happens. What's this Marvel notification we just got? Is that for Ant-Man and the Wasp tonight during the College Football National Championship?
Tune into the College Championship, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love when they make all these fucking nerds tune into games.
Yeah. They did it with Star Wars 3 times.
Oh, the Star Wars thing was the Monday Night Football first Force Awakens trailer was an like that is one of the more memorable experiences I've ever had, like for movie stuff.
Again, I'll be quick. We're coming up short of time here. No surprise to anybody. My number one is Oppenheimer. I'll be front of the line for every Christopher Nolan movie. At the same time, you know, wasn't crazy about Tenet. I really hope he kind of goes back to his roots here, making movies that are epic in scope and yet intimate in terms of their character stuff. I think Nolan is at his best when he's really focusing on characters, which he's gotten away from a little bit in his last few movies. Incredible cast. I feel like he's got something to prove with this, and I can't wait to see it.
Chris, you weren't on for this, but the absolute you're looking at two fucking bozos in me and Gooch who showed up to Avatar going like, hey, we got to get there in time for the Oppenheimer prologue.
Nothing.
Just not even the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
We gotta get in our seats for the.
They didn't even play the trailer.
Before. No.
All we got was
Barbie. We saw it in Dolby. Yeah. Just we were like told PFT. We're like, hey, you got to meet us after. We got to go see the Oppenheimer prologue. It's stupid. Fuck. All right. Well, I guess next week we're talking Plane.
Can't wait.
Sometimes you're getting
Plane reminds me
most unusual place.
Plane reminds me that what's his face is in it, Luke Cage.
Culture.
And all that reminds me of is whatchamacallit wants to be back as Iron Fist.
Yeah, that's right.
Which Finn, I'll tell you what.
Spin something?
I have nothing against him, but if you know Marvel lore, you know that the street heroes and villains and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. have the most rabid fan bases. They want all of them back in anything. And the second Iron Fist guy said he wants to come back, they're like, nah, you're good. Nah. Nah. That's all right. You can stay in. We're good. We're good with you. That's it. For Ken, Jack, Gooch, Chris, I'm Jeff DeLo. We'll talk to you next time.
Have a good week at the box office, folks.
It's Fran from Chicks in the Office. It's peak summer. One plan is turning into five, but trust, I'll be wearing Abercrombie to all of them. Catch me in their Sloan Taylor pan at work and then the happy hour right after. The Dylan dress for dinner plans when you want something easy but still put together. And of course, their denim. Because Abercrombie denim just works, no matter the plan. Keep up with the pace of summer without overthinking it. Shop in the app, online, and in stores.
Dedication isn't born in the light of day. It's carved in the quiet hours. Before the world blinks awake, at Boar's Head, we rise with a mission. To deliver craftsmanship worthy of your table. A slice of something special folded into every moment worth savoring. Because dedication means delivering only the very best. Boar's Head, committed to craft since 1905.
I'm here to help.
On August 21st,
we have a story.
Mutiny arrives on the big screen.
Who are you?
It is Trust Me.
Jason Statham stars in the action movie to end your summer.
What do you want?
Vengeance.
Mutiny. Rated R.